It's done.
Wow. Joe Conroy, alcoholic. Joe. Thanks, Brian. Trevor, Ryan, my friend, going to read up at the end. These balloons are freaking me out up here. I keep thinking somebody's going to come out dancing. I did find a glass lens in the men's room. If anybody lost a lens, their phone, to their glass. Can you guys hear me all right? I know it's a little tough with this thing. Joe Conroy, alcoholic, been sober since January 1st, 1989. Sue, thanks for having me. Yeah, whatever. I live in San Diego. I'm from Boston, so don't get all confused because everybody's going to go, boy, he's from San Diego. I counted 39 people with under one year of sobriety. That's pretty good for a conference, you guys. 39 people. And I hope I say something or something somebody says to you guys so you keep coming back. You know, 11 days, 18 days, and I didn't hear the last woman how much time she had, but that's really, really cool that you're here. I couldn't do that when I first got sober. I couldn't. I hated AA people. I just hated them. Just hated. I didn't like how happy everybody was. It just irritated the heck out of me. I'm the type of drinker that used to drink at the house to go get drunk, if you know what. And I didn't know that was 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. And that's really what we're going to talk about a lot here. It's been a wonderful weekend. I don't know if Ricky is here, the woman who spoke last night, but if you guys are not here, you know, she brought, who did she bring with her last night? She brought, I can't think of it. What was her dad's name? Rod Stewart was here last night, guys, all you young people. Rod Stewart was in the room. That was really a wonderful, she talked about the power. She invited us into the power. This is like, may you find that power now. If you're struggling with whatever's going on in your life, connect to the power. If you're connected to something material, it's probably not going to be big enough, shiny enough, or anything enough for you. But if you're connected with something that's spiritual, some sort of power that's greater than yourself, you'll get rocketed into that fourth dimension of existence that Wilson talks about in the Big Book, which is really just right here and right now. You know, even though it's 100 and whatever degrees out here, it's hot, you know. But I'll never forget when I was a kid, I went to a Catholic church, and Father Baghetta was this orator. He was one of these priests that really just talked like wonderfully. He could put you in the palm of his hand, but he talked forever. You know, you get a preacher or a priest that goes on and on, or even an AA speaker, and on and on and on, which I'm not going to try to do tonight. But I'll never forget, it was like a Saturday, it was in August, I'm in Boston, and it's a really hot day, and I'm in an old Catholic church, and everybody's fanning themselves because there's no air conditioning. It's really, really hot. And I'll never forget, he walked up onto the altar, and everybody goes, oh my God, Father Baghetta, he's going to talk forever on a hot, hot day. And then he gets up to do his homily, and he goes, remember, there's only one place that's hotter than this. And he walked away from the microphone. I've never forgotten. That's the only sermon I've ever remembered in my life. You know, it's like, oh, my God. But I think I found a hotter place. This is hot. This is a man. And I don't think Bill Wilson was out here. He says, hey, Ma, the wind stopped blowing. The wind hasn't stopped blowing all day today. It's been blowing like hell out there today. It's wonderful. But I'm just so happy to be here, and I hope if you're struggling with somebody with alcoholism, I hope you tell somebody about it. You know, I'm driving out here, and I'm just alone, and I wanted to talk to people, and I met this kid a couple of weeks ago. He had 11 days of sobriety. So I wondered, he was in Billings, Montana. I says, I wonder if this kid still has 11 days of sobriety. So I texted him. I says, I'm just checking up on you. How you doing? And he texted me back, like, within minutes. He says, I'm really not doing very good at all. He says, I'm really, really in a bad way. I'm really not good at all. And I called him. I said, what's going on? He's in tears. I says, what's wrong? He says, I was just thinking of ending it all, Joe, when you texted me. I went, what do you mean ending it? He said, like ending it all. He says, you're going to hurt yourself? He goes, I don't know. I'm really, really, really in emotional, spiritual pain. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I can live like this. 29 years old. 29 years old. Everybody has this expectation that life is just going to be roses, you know? And we talked for a while, and he was just in tears. Just this really rough, rough alcoholism. And I pulled the old sponsorship. I don't sponsor this kid. I just met him, and I thought it was great. I could connect with somebody that's brand new in sobriety. And I said, did you make your bed today? Guys, I want to, but I want to sleep. And every time I look at it, it's all roughed up, and I go jumping back into it. I go, why don't you make the bed, make it really fluffy, and make it nice so you don't want to jump back into it. I says, did you eat? No, I'm really hungry. Why don't you eat? And when you do those things, I want you to call me back and tell me that you did them. And then I think you should probably reach out to somebody locally in Billings and see if you can do that. And he literally did those two things right away. And then he called me back and he says, as I was talking to you, another friend of mine had texted me and I told him I'm in trouble and I need help. And he showed up at the door. And I needed a bicycle and I went out and bought a bicycle. He was in emotional pain. He said, Joe, I can handle physical pain, but I can't handle emotional pain. And this kid went out and he bought a brand new bicycle. And 15 minutes later, he crashed and he broke his knee. God will give you what you're asking for, trust me. I can handle physical pain, he said. I can't handle emotional pain. Crack, okay, I heard you. You know, watch what you pray for. But that's the power. That's the power we talk about. If you think Alcoholics Anonymous is magical, it's not magical at all. It is the most mysterious thing you can ever experience in your life. And a mystery is just that. Why did, when I was in my cups, when I was drinking so bad, when I didn't know what to do, I approached a man that I could not stand. I thought he was the biggest moron I'd ever met in my life. But somebody had told me he was in 8 years, he was in Alcoholics Anonymous for the past 8 years. And it was like, wow. I tended bar in Boston for years. I've been around alcoholics all my life. I know what it's like to be an alcoholic. But I didn't know what it was like to be a sober person. And a sober member of AA. And this guy was a moron. And I'm going, wow. And he's still sober. And I'll tell you what, I approached him. I said, Dick, I have a problem with alcohol. I love drinking. Up until today, I love drinking. Up until the day I took my last drink, which was New Year's Eve, 1989. I took my sobriety days, January 1st, 1989. I took my last drink about 11:30. I don't know what time it was. You know, if we really needed to know all these statistics, we would write them down. You know, everybody goes, oh, I'm going to tell my story someday in Palm Springs, 116 degrees, you know. I might have all the facts because they'll be checking me. They'll be checking my facts, you know. But I took my last drink on New Year's Eve, and I didn't know what a last drink was. But the guy, Dick, that I asked for help months before, he said, Joe, there'll come a time if you're done with drinking, you ask some power greater than yourself for help, you'll never have to take another drink as long as you live. He didn't say, yes, I'm God. He said, ask some power greater than yourself. And that's why I think when Ricky talked about the power of the fellowship, it's really, really a wonderful thing. And if you guys are struggling, the 39 people under a year, there might be a couple more. Why do I know that? Because I didn't tell anybody I had under a year of sobriety. So I know there's probably another 10% of that all over here. But it's that the power is really right next to you. It's right next to you, you know, especially if you come in, if you come in groups, you know, if you come in the what do we call them, the fantastic people, you know, it's like, oh, they just come into a meeting and just take over, cookies and coffee is gone, like that, you know. Sorry. But if you come in a van, do yourself a favor, fan out. Don't sit with the people that you're going to be with all week long. Fan out. Sit with people that you don't know. Meet somebody brand new. And you're going to have what we call an experience. And it might be a spiritual experience. It might just be an experience. You might sit next to somebody that's just grumpy and cranky and has teeth. I mean, they have teeth, hopefully. But they have food, you know, coming out of their mouth when they're talking to you. Oh, my God, these people are crazy. And all of a sudden, you're going to have a relationship that starts with the handshake. You don't think that you know, when you come in your pack, it's really comfortable just to move around in that pack. It's like a pack of dogs. We're looking for something. You know, we're just looking, and your ass is just, the tail is wagging, you know. It's like, here we go. But sit down next to somebody you don't know and introduce yourself. And we try to do the same thing. Why do you, when you're new, we ask you to stand up and give us your name? Why? You go, why do they make us do that? It's because some boob that was talking to his sponsor that morning, worrying about Christmas coming up 6 months from now, going, God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford Christmas. Jesus, will you leave me alone? Why don't you go to the meeting tonight, and when somebody stands up and gives you your name, go up and say hi to that person and use their name. What do you mean? He says, use their name. Remember just one. There's something that happens when we connect with that person's name. We connect with that, and then we reach out and shake their hand. Something physically happens to get them rocketed into this dimension, which is right here and right now. And I didn't do that. When I tell you I didn't like anybody, we'd have receivers. We'd have people at the door, right, greeting you. God, I hate them. Hate them. They're all so happy. It's like, oh, my God, they're so happy. And I'm like, hi, how you doing? All right, just leave me alone. Just go. Well, how do you get in here without, you know, where's the back door? you know? I know there's a lot of backdoor people in here. Where's the back door? You know, let me get in the back door, you know? And then try to find a seat. And all the seats are taken up with keys, you know? And you're looking, you don't have a car, and you're seeing all these car keys go, oh. All of a sudden, we become a thief. I wonder whose key that is, you know? I don't know why we don't get cars stolen. Think about it. Think about it. There's so many people put their keys down on the seat, and then they walk away, and they talk for a half hour. Some newcomer come in here going, I need a car. Oh, Jesus, look at that. Yeah, cool. See you later, guys. Thanks. I love AA. You know, it's like crazy. Now, you don't have to do that just because I mentioned it, right? It's like, maybe I might try that because I need a new car, too. It's like really cool. But when I came in here, I really didn't like it. When I tell you that 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, it was so difficult to be sober. It was so difficult to strip myself of all that. The pretense and defense that alcohol gives us to makes us do those things, those stupid things that we did. Stupid things that we did that we'd never tell anybody about. Then you come into a meeting and you're brand new and these people are talking about things that, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. You did what? With who? With how many times? Jesus, you got to be, and oh my God, and now look at you, you're wonderful. But that's what it is, that we strip ourselves, and I strip myself of all pretense and defense and trust that if I tell you my story, you're not going to hurt me. Because my story is not for everybody. Your story is not for everybody. Your story is to be shared for one other person so they can probably come back just tomorrow. Not for the rest of their life, just tomorrow. That's really as simple as this thing. If you think that you're going to help somebody stay sober, Bill Wilson, when he went to Akron, he was 6 months sober and he wanted a drink that night. He went to the Mayflower Hotel. He wanted to take a drink and he was walking up the hall, listening to the gay crowd inside, as it said in the book, and the clinking of the glasses. He set up that obsession of the mind. And this obsession of the mind, oh my God, that sounds a lot nicer than going to a meeting. That sounds like a lot easier thing to go reach out for somebody who doesn't want what I have. That seems like a so much easier way to just maybe just take just one. And then he goes, God, maybe I should just try. And he started making a phone call, calling people, and nobody answered. And think of that, 90 years ago almost, 89 years ago. Can you imagine that? Imagine how heavy that phone was. If you, especially you new guys, a lot of the older people know how heavy those old phones used to be. Jesus, you could. Everybody had arms back then because the phones were so heavy, you know. And now we have an earplug. We go, oh, how you doing? It's good to see you. And everybody thinks we're crazy because we're talking to the air, you know. So anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, so Wilson, and he meets Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob was like, you know, I'll give this guy 15 minutes, but he just has no idea. I'm a scientist. I'm a doctor. I know how to cure things. He didn't know how to cure his alcoholism. People were praying over him, at him, through him to help him. And they were praying for an angel. And a broken down stockbroker from New York City shows up. And he probably said, how you doing? Just think about it. How you doing? Hey, Bob's just shaking, just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Wow, you know? And all two guys from Vermont meet in Akron, Ohio. And the one guy is sober, and the other guy is struggling with a seemingly hopeless state. And I think that's the whole key. The seemingly, that's the key word in that is seemingly. In the mind. The main problem with the alcoholic centers in our mind. The seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I can figure this out. Don't worry about me. And all of a sudden, Bill shows up and he says, I don't want a drink and I'm here to help you. He didn't say those words, but he was taking the action. The first line in the 12th step of the 12 and 12 says, joy of living is our code, but action is the key word. Most people just want the joy. Just think about Christmas. You just want the present, right? If you're anything like me, I had five other brothers. My dad died when I was a kid. We didn't have any money. I'd be opening my Christmas present, looking at what my brothers were getting, not what I was getting. Because I was so riddled with resentment and doubt. And I'm like, oh my God, not again. And here it is, I can't do this sort of stuff. And all of a sudden you come in here and you just everybody says, why don't you just be yourself? Oh God, no, don't do that to me. Don't do that to me. And I swear to God, if you can get there quick, if you can get to that place that you are yourself, the quicker you get there, and I'll tell you how to do it. You probably don't want to hear it. It's probably the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're going to uncover, discover, and discard that pomp and that circumstance that's hiding that power that's deep down inside of you. And when you get those things done, then you go into the traditions and you take care of all them. You take care of everybody else. It's like, what are the traditions? This so I can just not kill you people, you know? And think about it, that's really what it is. I want to just run the show. I want to run the whole show. I remember years ago, somebody asked Dr. Paul, because he said, Dr. Paul, you live in Los Angeles. How can you deal with all that traffic? He goes, I drive just the one vehicle. Wow, you're kidding me. Think how simple that is. I bet you every one of us, we get in the car, you get behind that wheel, and it's, you know, that we are Mario Andretti. We are test pilots. We are perfect drivers. And we can see them coming. He's going to try to get in front of me. I know he is. Oh, he's now going to go a little bit faster. Just a little bit, just to irritate them. You know, how many times does this happen in the road? Just like, and you just let him go. When Dr. Paul said, I just drive the one vehicle. What a simple concept. I don't know if any of you guys have ever judged anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I forget who was talking this afternoon. I think it was Hilda. We went to the little meeting this afternoon, and she was talking about, I don't want to go to that meeting anymore. Why? Because that person says the same thing every Friday night in the same way. It just drives me crazy. Can you imagine that? We all do that. We're going to the meeting worrying about what Joe's going to say that night, what Brian's going to say that night. Just don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You go to the meeting and go, I wish somebody would call on me. I've been coming here for 3 weeks. God, I wish I had so much to share. And you're sitting there just like, you know how we do this? You know, so the chairperson can see us. You know, it's like, oh, you got tall all of a sudden. How about the guy over there? He's like, oh, God, no, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. But just this magic magnifying mind that we want to control and enjoy our thinking. God, if they would just give me what I could just ask me to, oh, please. Oh, no, I can't. Just. So if you're anywhere like that, you're in the right spot here tonight, man. I'll tell you what. Wow, it's just crazy. Am I going to go to the rave? Am I going to go to the dance? Am I going to go to the, what do they call it? The karaoke or whatever, jerry-oke? Woo-hoo, wow. You're not singing tonight. Oh, yeah, that's good. No, good. But it's like, just show up. The greatest three words in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a lot of them, but get in the car is probably the biggest thing you can ever do to your life. Just get in the car. Where are we going? Who cares? Just go. Let's go. Well, what do you mean we're going to go to L.A.? Oh, it's going to be fun. God, it's so long. It's such a, and all of a sudden, the trip gets shorter and shorter and shorter because you're having relationships with other people in the car. And you're picking up these whack jobs along the way. It's just like, where did this guy come from? Oh, I picked him up in Encinitas. Jesus, you got to be kidding. Now there's no room. I'm sitting on the hump. Sit there and shut up and listen, you know? It's like, but all of a sudden you start taking this action and you start finding something that you've always, always, always wanted but didn't know how to get, and that's called love. That's called love, folks. I tell you, I hate to, and my sponsor has a great acronym for it. I'm going to share it with you right now. Listen, overlook, value, and encourage. Think about it. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we come here and we listen. We overlook those things that we really don't get, we don't really need at the time, and then we value those things like a huge, huge, big deal, and then we encourage people. First thing is, keep coming back. Next thing is, get a sponsor. Next thing is, kind of work the steps. Next thing is, get a commitment. Get 5 commitments. Get 6 commitments. Oh, my God, I haven't any time. Sure you do. You got all sorts of time. It's an illusion. Time itself is an illusion. But if you jump into this thing, wow. You get the gift. You get the gift that just keeps on giving, because every time you give it away to somebody, you turn around, you walk away, and they're giving it away to somebody else. This 12th step, we don't talk enough about, I don't think, in Alcoholics. And we focus on the negative stuff. The 4th step, oh, Jesus, I can't die. Oh, God, I don't want to talk about that. God damn, I write it down. You know what's on your 4th step. You know everything in there. You just don't want to reveal it. And you want to know something else? We know what's on there, too. We know it's there. Something you touched or shouldn't have touched or maybe messed around with. Or we know. It's just, it's no big deal. It's going to relieve you of the bondage of self. Because it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe. And then all of a sudden, you did that? Wow. You were a nun. Yeah, I know. But I'll tell you what, if you can get to that place where it's right here and right now, if you can just get to that place where you trust, there's a wonderful pamphlet called The Members I View of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just so happen to have on me, and I just love this pamphlet. I put a couple back there. Let me tell you a funny story. So this is a pamphlet that was a transcribed talk that a guy named Alan McGinnis from L.A. gave years ago to a group of professionals at UCLA, and it's like the best selling. I gotta get my glasses. I get the best selling piece of literature in AA. Well, a couple of years ago, there was a big rumor that they were gonna discontinue A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know a lot of people that love this pamphlet, and I was freaked out. They're going to discontinue it. Well, I got on the gsoaa.com website, and I ordered 250 of them for myself and 250 of them for a woman I know down in Tampa who loves this thing. And I said, oh my God, what am I going to do with 250 pamphlets? And then I got another 250 because I was really worried that they were going to stop discontinuing it. And then I called GSO. It's kind of like we do this all the time. We make a decision and then we call the sponsor, right? I don't know if I did this right, you know? So I called GSO and I says, hey, I got to ask you about this, the pamphlet being discontinued. Oh, gosh, thank you for calling, because it has just become the biggest fake news in Alcoholics Anonymous. I go, what? She says, the Cooperation for Public something, the CPC committee, which is a big committee in AA, and it actually helps the people in the professional community. This was part of their packet. Now, a packet is a group of pamphlets that they hand to the doctors. So some of these doctors go, you know, this mentions Jesus and the Bible. They go, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, this was a talk again. Oh, yeah, yeah, we can't do that. Why? Well, we've kind of got regulations. Well, what are we going to do? They go, well, why don't we just take it out of the packet? That was the decision. What Alcoholics Anonymous heard, they were going to discontinue this thing. And what we ran with was, you can't do that. So anyway, you know there's a lot of controversy in AA all the time, but it's really wonderful, because I just love this thing, because it's especially for you new guys, it says, I am personally convinced that the basic search of every human being from the cradle to the grave is to find at least one other person before whom he can stand completely naked, stripped of all pretense or defense, and trust that person not to hurt him, because that other person has stripped himself naked too. This lifelong search can begin to end with the first AA encounter. Begin to end with the first AA encounter. Think about the first. I Dick D, who 12-stepped me in the banks of the Charles River in Boston, he was the guy that said to me, Joe, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking, you'll never have to take another drink as long as you live. This was the guy that I didn't like. This is the guy that I thought was a moron. This was the guy that, 8 years of sobriety. I have never seen him since. Never. I have repeated that line over and over and over. The first AA encounter, not the first AA encounter. And that man died 2 years ago in COVID, during COVID. He was 89 years old or something like that. I was on a Zoom meeting, and it was back in Boston, and I asked this guy, hey, is Dick D still alive? Jesus, Joe, he just died a week ago. He said the funeral was full. And I told him that story I just told you guys. He said, wow, he did that to a lot of people. And I think this whole action of anonymity and humility is really, really a big deal. The fact that I'm up here tonight is like, you know, if you're sitting here going, God, I want to be a circuit speaker. What is that? You know, they ask us, why do they ask me to do these things? I have no idea. When I tell you, my first sponsor, when I was 3 years sober, before I was like this in AA. Yeah, I hate you people. Can't stand being sober. You know, and I was just sober. There's a lot of people in AA are just sober. I haven't had a drink in years. How's your life? Oh, it's just, you know, it's, yeah. And all of a sudden, this man I asked to sponsor me, he said, let's go through the steps. Oh, I've been through the steps. Yeah, really? Yeah, I have, yeah. And we started to uncover and discover and discard. I started to get down into causes and conditions. I thought you guys were my causes, and you guys were my conditions. It's my defects of character that keep me separated from you. It's your defects of character that keep you separated. It's the way of life that we lived up until we got here and stayed here. That's the biggest thing. Because it's going to be painful, folks. If anybody told you it's going to be all roses, which I wonder, love your roses here. I'm going to tell a little story about the roses here in a minute. But if you're going to be disappointed, have zero expectation about alcoholics. If you want something more than the sobriety, you're going to be so disappointed with AA. But you'll get a whole lot more than sobriety if you stick around and give everything you've been given away to somebody else. The paradox in here is unbelievable how this worked. What do you mean, give it all away? You just gave it to me. Give it all away. And it's going to come back exponentially. You're just going to grow that. You're just going to grow and grow. You're going to be like a great big flower. And all of a sudden, but the fertilization is like the crap that you have to take from newcomers. The crap that you have to take, and think about crap is just a fertilizer. It really is. And it's just all the stuff that people throw at you over the years. And all of a sudden, you just start growing emotionally and then spiritually. And then you're like into that, Wow, you just got shot at, Joe. It's okay. You know? But this is, it won't really get like that, but things won't start to affect you. They won't start to affect you. When you start putting the 12 steps, the effective course of action is Alcoholics Anonymous. The effective course of action is Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. And if you really want to become a PhD, the 12 concepts. Oh. But they're wonderful. Concept 9 talks about leadership. If you want to be a great sponsor, if you just started sponsoring somebody, pick up Concept 9 and start reading about Concept 9. Bill talks about leadership, about the leadership of service, the leadership of sponsorship, the leadership of doing your general service and your group service. Just like, what's it like? Trust me, when somebody asks you to be a coffee maker, oh my God, you're gonna trust me with coffee, and you gotta make the perfect, most delicious coffee. And if you're brand new, and you're probably gonna go to get Starbucks coffee, and these guys are gonna want, they're gonna love me. And you get there early and you prepare it and you set up a table that's wonderful with the sugar and the creamer and all that, and some old timer comes in and goes, God, what kind of coffee is this? That's Starbucks. Jesus, we've been using U-Band for years, and I can't believe you. Oh, God, this is awful. Then you're going to sit here, and you're going to plummet. You're going to plummet, and your cookies are going to be scattered all over the counter. It's just awful, and the sugar is going to be messed up, and your sponsor's going to come in, and you're just like in tears because it's so upset. You go, oh, God, they hate me. God, they love you, Joe. Just keep coming back next week. What? Okay. It does happen, this magic. You know, we scratch things that don't even itch around here. It's like, you hear somebody talking about some disease in South Sahara Africa, and all of a sudden, Jesus, I got that. Look it, I got it. I got it right here. Look, my God, I'm dying. It's just the main problem with this alcoholic centers in his mind. And when I tell you I am a whack job, I think you probably already figured that out now. I'm just like, I'm out of control. And I love every minute of it. I love every single minute of it. Because that's what people identify. This identification process that happens in here is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And when Bill sat with Dr. Bob for 15 minutes, and it took hours, and Bob said, my God, this guy knows what he's talking about. This guy knows what he's talking about. And what now Bill didn't walk away and say to Bob, okay, I'm going back to Vermont. I'm going back to New York. Why don't we just forget about this? You know what they said? We got to find somebody else. We got to find somebody else and give this to. Who are we going to find? And they called the hospital. Dr. Bob was a doctor, and the nurses, yeah, we got a real corker in here. He just knocked out one of the nurses. So they go down and they meet a lawyer. Three very successful, materially successful people started this thing. Think about it. This is, if they suffered from a material malady, and Bill came to Bob and said, oh, we'll put some money in the 401k, and we'll get an aggressive fund, and we'll just build this up. And Bill was a stockbroker, and we'll start making returns. You make a lot of money, and then we'll give this away. Bill said, "Ah, Jesus, Bob, I don't know what to tell you, but I don't want to drink. I'm here to help myself, whether you take it or not." And then Bob got it, and he goes, "Wow, he knows what to do." And what did he say? "Let's give this away to somebody else. Give it away. Not just give it away." And it took several more years to get where we are today. And we're here, and and it's just a wonderful way of life. The problem with AA is it takes T-I-M-E. Oh, my God. How long did it take to get 30 days? Wow. You give away 90-day chips? That's 90 days? Yeah. I got to wait a year to get a cake? Yeah. Luther's got, did you say 51 years without a drink? God, buy him a drink. But think about it. It's you know, it takes time. And we don't have that. It's the most precious thing. You know, instant messages is not fast enough for people. They want 5G. They, you know, my God, where's the Wi-Fi? My God, I got messages to answer. 2-hour delivery. God, can't you do it now? It's unbelievable. We're just not satisfied with anything. And you come into AA and they go, "You want me to read a book that was written in 1939? You've got to be kidding me." No. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to read it together. It's the hokiest thing you've ever done in your life. And you're sitting there going, "Really, have I seen a person fail?" It's already fallen on my path. Every time every time I hear how it read works, it takes about 3 minutes and 30 seconds, folks. 3 minutes and 30 seconds. The faster you get into meditation, the better your life is going to be. I know there's people with you had 39 people under a year of sobriety. If the next time you hear how it works read, close your eyes and listen to it. And meditate on the words that are being said. Close your eyes and listen to it. You will be amazed at how different it is every single time. Without fail, people mispronounce words. They add a word. They don't say it right. And you just sit there and go, "Wow, he's absolutely right." And 3 minutes and 30 seconds, just about on average, and you can start your meditation process at the very next meeting you go to. And it will change your life. And if you try that, if one person tried it, and then somebody's going to come up, they're going to see you with your eyes closed and go, "What are you doing?" I said, "Jesus, some bulb. I heard him talk, and he said you ought to just close your eyes and listen to this for 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And I tell you what, I've been doing it for 30 days now, and this has been the fastest 30 days of my life." Because you get right into that moment. You get right into that space that's right here and right now. Because most of the time, when how it works, watch. If you want to do this first, when how it works is read, usually what happens is people pick up their phone. And they start looking at the stuff. They start looking at the stuff. But if you cannot do those things and pick up a book, every time, to my sponsor, when I first started going to his house, he said, can you do me a favor? And I want you to read how it works while I'm cooking. He used to cook me dinner on Saturday night. And I'm looking around the room for the piece of paper. He says, "What are you looking for?" I says, "The piece of paper." He said, "What piece of paper?" I said, "The piece of paper that everybody reads how it works off of." He goes, "It's in the big book." I said, "It is?" He goes, "Yeah." How many times do you see people pick up a big book and read how it works? They read it off a form. That's another thing you can do is pick up the book, because the newcomer sitting there doesn't realize that they're reading out of that book called Alcoholics Anonymous. We gave away three of them tonight. I hope you guys read it. You know, I hope you look at it, you know, and go, "Wow, this is really hokey crap." Yeah. And read it with somebody else, and it becomes music. It becomes music. It really, and it'll change. It's kind of like if you listen to a song from the 50s or 60s, it's very different today. And every time you read that big book, everybody goes, "My God, I can't believe they put this wasn't here the other day." But it's really this, that's what we call that. Clancy used to call that disease of perception. You're only going to see what you can see when you're ready to see what you're going to see. And all of a sudden, when you start clearing away all the wreckage of the past, when you get rid of your defects of character, you're able to see things clearer. Chuck Chamberlain had that other thing, a new pair of glasses. What does that mean? It's just like we start to see things that are just beautiful. I was going to talk about the roads. I sponsored this guy that started, there's a huge, well, it's not very big anymore. I don't know if it is or not. See, this is how my mind goes. On my head, I start arguing with myself for no reason at all. There's a church up in L.A. called the Agape, which is a religious science church. And agape is a Greek word for unconditional love. And a guy that I sponsored years ago helped start this church. And it was really a non-denominational, huge spiritual church. And this guy, I forgot what I was going to tell you there for a minute. And then this guy asked me to sponsor him, and I was really intimidated by him because he was a really spiritual person. But only whack jobs asked me to sponsor him, so I knew somewhere in there he was a wackadoo. You know, I knew there had to be something that was a little off on this guy. And sure enough, he called me up one day, and he says, "I'm in trouble." I said, "What's going on?" "I'm in trouble. I'm in really big trouble." And I said, "Meet me down at the coffee shop. We'll talk." So I met him down at the coffee shop. He says, "I'm in real trouble, Joe. I don't know what to do." I said, Well, let's get a cup of coffee. And I'm going, "God, I don't know what to do with this guy." He was intimidating to me because he was a spiritual giant. And then he says, "I'm in real trouble." And he started telling me, "Whoa, hang on a minute, get in the car. Where are we going to go?" I don't know. So we got in the car and we went down to Balboa Park, which is downtown San Diego. And he says, "What are we going to do?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "God, I don't know what to do. Help me out here." So I see the rose bushes over in Balboa Park. And I said, "Let's go over to the rose bushes." He goes, "What for?" I said, "I don't know. Let's just go over to the rose bushes." We go over and they sit there, and it's a beautiful spring day, and the roses are in full bloom. He goes, "What are we going to do now? I'm in trouble." I said, "Why don't you go over there and smell that yellow rose?" I don't know where that came from. And I said, "And tell me what it smelled like." He went, I go, "Ah, come on. I'm starting to read some meditation." I said, take a deep from the diaphragm. Just take a deep, deep breath from the diaphragm and get it into your soul." And he went, "Oh, my God." And he gave me the scent. And I went, "What?" And he told me what it smelled. I said, "Go over and smell that red rose." He went over the red rose. And I said, "Give that big time." He went, "Oh, my God." And he gave me the scent. I'm like, "What?" And the two of us started standing there smelling the roses like two boobs. I'm going, "Wow, this smells like a lemon. Wow, this smells like an orange." And all of a sudden I started realizing that stop and smell the roses is not a phrase. It's an action. Every time I walk by a rose, I stop and I stick my nose in it and I smell it. And I tell you what, it will change your life. It is a moment. Every time I walk into Albertsons or Vaughn's in San Diego, I go up the escalator where the roses are, and I go over, "Oh, hello, ladies. Here comes the rose man," you know. But I tell you what, if you can start taking action, the simplest action will change your life. When you go up and you greet a newcomer, when you go up and say, "How are you doing? Do you have a sponsor? Have you worked the steps? Are you reading the big book of AA? Are you reading the 12 and 12? Are you reading the pamphlet of Members Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous? I can't read. I don't know how to read. Well, why don't you come over and we'll do it together?" You got to be kidding me. You don't have that sort of time. I do have that sort of time because I'm not living in a life of selfishness and self-centeredness. I'm living a life of other-centered person. And that's what we have to do in here. We're other-centered. And it's like, wow, if you can do those things, your life will start to change. And then you'll start to change other people's lives. Gandhi used to say, "Be the change you want to be." Be the change. What is that? That's like, just take the action. Do what's right. Do the right thing. These are all simple. You know, every book that's written on spiritual stuff has been regurgitated from ancient Chinese time. It's just regurgitated. It's put with a different cover, and people sell millions and millions and millions of dollars of books. Oprah Winfrey made billions of dollars getting on television going, "Tell me your story." That's what we do in here. Tell me your story. Oh, you don't want to hear my story. I might not want to hear your story, but somebody else in the room needs to hear your story because they're struggling with a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. They need that identification process so they can keep coming back tomorrow. And really, that keep coming back is a phrase that we use over and over and over. It's kind of like the South when people, you know, are boring you and they go, "Bless his heart," you know. You know, and if somebody's in a meeting going on and on and on, we always say, yeah, keep coming back. You know, it's like, it's just a pleasant way of shut up, please, you know. But think about it, that when we all, every one of us, the people, Luther, he's been coming back for 51 years. You guys with 11 days, they're already gone, but they kept coming back, you know. But that's the process of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the process of showing up, even when you don't want to show up, stripping yourself naked of all pretense and defense, even when you don't want to do that. When I was 8 years sober, I got diagnosed with AIDS. 8 years sober, I was literally on my 8th anniversary. I'm over at the VA. I was really sick, and nobody knew what was going on. They tested me for everything. And they said, what about your HIV status? I said, HIV status? What, are you crazy? No, they weren't, you know. And 8 years sober, January 1st, 1997, the doctor said, Mr. Conroy, you've got pneumocystis pneumonia, and you're really, really sick. I go, oh, my God. And she told me I was like that far from death. And I said, Doc, I've been coming to AA for 8 years. And they talk about surrender, and I really never knew what that word meant until right here and right now. And I said, I felt like I was in prison. I said, can I make a phone call? She said, sure. And I called my sponsor. He said, Joe, congratulations. It's really wonderful to have you. I go, Buzz, I'm dying. He says, you can't die. I got to give you a cake Friday night at the men's meeting. Just like that. When we're in pain, when we're in the future, when we're way in fear, your sponsor, that man that has the wrench that'll loosen or tighten the nut that's on the top of your head, that person that'll bring you right into the moment, that's the key here. When Mikey said, Joe, I'm thinking of killing myself, I said, can you make your bed first? Think about it. He goes, what? Make your bed first. I did say, are you really thinking of hurting yourself? Because if you are, I'm going to have to make a phone call. He said, it's just painful. Make your bed first. Think about that. Have something to eat. Think about that. When we're angry, lonely, tired, what's the other one? And hungry. Every single one of us is hungry. When I was really sick, I come home from the hospital and I'm all alone in my house. I didn't live with anybody and I had no food. I had a half gallon of milk in my refrigerator. I don't drink milk. Why did I have a half gallon of milk in the refrigerator? That was it. And I'll never forget, I had ordered a food delivery and they couldn't get to me for a couple of days and something like this. And I remember talking to Bus, my sponsor, and he goes, how you doing? I said, Bus, I'm so hungry. He says, why don't you eat something? I don't have any food, man. He says, why don't you go to the, I said, I don't have any money. He says, why don't you just lie down and take a nap and see what happens? I went, okay. So I took a nap, and I woke up, and I walked to the refrigerator just to, kind of the half gallon of milk became my best friend. You know, it was like, that was it. And I opened the refrigerator door, and it was full of food. And I remember I called him. I said, Bus, my refrigerator is full of food. He says, I know. I said, how do you know? He says, I called the guys at the meeting, and they all went to the store, and they knew you were asleep, and they came in, and they filled up your refrigerator. Bus, I can't pay them back. He says, I didn't ask you to, and they will never. What do I do? He says, someday you're going to have to fill up somebody's refrigerator. I filled up a lot of people's refrigerators, and I do it for fun and for free. And I walk to work every morning. Not every morning. I only work 3 days a week. I walk around the water. And I walk around the waterfront in San Diego, and there's a lot of homeless people in San Diego. I was talking to my buddy over here. He says, they're everywhere. You know what I do? I make a sandwich for myself, and if I have enough, I make a sandwich for somebody else. And I give them a little glass of water, and I say, how you doing today, man? Geez, I've had better days. Are you hungry? God, I'm starving. Yeah, this is a sandwich. It's cut in half if you want to share it with one of your buddies, but it's the only thing I could do for you. And they always say something like, God bless. You know, I just think about when I was hungry. Think about when you're hungry. Think about when you're lonely. Think about when you're angry. Think about when you're tired. And if you can just get over those things and turn towards somebody else, you get rocketed into that fourth dimension. And when I'm walking home, back home from work, you know what happens? These guys and gals go, Joe, how you doing, man? I go, Betty, how you doing? It's good. It started out a good day, man. You know, I have a relationship with people that I have no judgment over. They stink. But they have a mother and they have a father and they have a heart. And they have, if I can give them just a little bit of hope, rather than just ignore them, just treat them like a piece of dog poop or something like that. But if I can just give them just a little bit, if I can look them in the eye and go, it might get a little better. It might get a little better. I can't guarantee that. But if I ignore them, I ignore my own self. I'm ignoring my own person coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm ignoring somebody that needs that help that we get in here. And that help is just wonderful. And those three words, those other three words is I need help. Think about that. On January 1st, 1989, when Dick Daugherty had said to me, Joe, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking. Ask some power greater than yourself for help. You'll never have to take another drink as long as you live. I was writing in a journal at the time, and those three words I wrote down, God, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. I had didn't know a soul in San Diego. I came out here to, I don't know what it was for. I didn't know what I didn't know that sobriety was around the corner. And next thing I know, I'm up at the central office in Santa Barbara, because my brother lives up in Santa Barbara, and he said, Joe, I called central office. They said they might be able to help you up. Can you get up here? And I drove up. It was a long, I was driving a 63 Ford Falcon station wagon. I was living in that car too. But it took me a while to get up there, and I was willing to go in any length to get there. And I remember sitting at this little place up there in a rocking chair. I wasn't in the rocking chair. This guy named Howard, who was 29 years of sobriety, he was just retired from Shell Oil Company as a merchant marine captain in a merchant marine ship, and I was so pissed off at him. And he goes, "What? You look like you're angry." I said, you know what, I wanted to be a merchant marine. He said, well, why didn't you? He said, because it's an awful lot of work. He goes, but it was a great way of life, Joe. And I go, 29 years without a drink, I'm sitting there just sweating. And he said, tell me your story. He did what Oprah Winfrey made, billions of dollars. He was doing it for fun and for free. He was sitting in that rocking chair, and I was telling him my story. And I have no, it was kind of like when you go to confession when you're a kid, bless me, Father, for I've sinned. I touched this. I shouldn't have taken that. I did this. Yeah, give me three Hail Marys, and I'll be on my way. You just go through the routine. But there's something different when you share with somebody that knows what's going on. And I wanted the stamp of approval. I wanted to be stamped into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, Howard, am I an alcoholic? And he said, I have no idea, Joe. But you just heard my story. He said, you're the only one that can say you're an alcoholic. He said, the people that are coming in and out of here, I know quite well because I know them from Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And they're coming in here and they're buying literature and they're doing all these other things. And I know they're alcoholics. He says, if you're an alcoholic, you're going to have to start going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to have to start changing your life. And I went to a meeting that night for the first time in my life with my brother, Jerry. Jerry's not an alcoholic. Jerry's a whack job. He's a year older than me. And he's incredibly emotional, just like incredible. My mother used to always say, Jesus, he's the emotional one. He's so emotional. And we get to the meeting, and he's hearing this guy tell his story. It was a speaker meeting. And I look over at him, and he's crying. I said, Jesus, what's wrong? He said, this is unbelievable. I don't know what he was hearing, because I wasn't hearing it. I was like, this is stupid. This is, like, ridiculous. I can't believe this guy. This guy's telling his story, and it was just, like, stupid. You know, and I'm just, Jerry's like, Jesus Christ, Joe, this is a great way of life. I'm like, what am I not hearing? And at the end, I didn't know you guys circled up in a circle and did the Lord's Prayer. And we're sitting there in the middle of the room, and all of a sudden the meeting ended, and everybody stood up, and they're going to the side, and we're sitting there going in the chair, and I'm looking around, geez, Jerry, I don't think we should be here. And this guy goes, come up here. Oh, come up. And they come up. And then the thing that rockets you into that dimension that Bill talks about, he says, people grab my hand. Oh, don't do that. I grabbed this guy's hand, and then I grabbed Jerry's hand, and they start the Lord's Prayer. And the tears were just filling up the room from Babel Jerry next to me. I said, Jesus Christ. He said, this is unbelievable. And I left there going, this is the hokiest thing I've ever been to in my life. And I have been coming back looking for that power ever since. That power is in the hands, it's in the eyes, it's in the places of Alcoholics Anonymous. That power is at the door. That if you're struggling with the God of your childhood, forgive that God of your childhood. Make amends to that God, that church, that person that may have hurt you. If you can make amends to that God and that power of your childhood, you'll connect to the power that's right here and right now. If you're having trouble with finances, my God, straighten them out. If you're having trouble, it's probably somebody you owe, somebody that owes you, somebody you haven't got down to causes and conditions. Straighten out those finances so you can retire and get out of debt. You don't need to be in debt. There's one thing, everybody goes, how you doing? Oh, it's great. How are you affording things? Oh my God, I got a new credit card. I got a Capital One with 10,000, gosh damn it. Oh, it's a, oh my God, get rid of it. Why? You don't need it. But everybody else has them. You don't, because it's gonna get you in trouble. If you're having trouble with your job, it's probably because you owe an amends to a past employer. This isn't rocket science. Make amends to your past employers. Give them back what you took. If you're having trouble with relationships, guess what? It's probably because you messed up a relationship from the past that you haven't been willing to make amends for. If you can clear up the past, the present will be the gift that you're looking to live with. It's really, it's not rocket science. But we just go, oh, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. Yeah, I do. How? Well, let me tell you what I was like. Let me tell you what happened to me, and let me tell you what I'm like now. Most of the time when you hear people quote that, they're going to, let me tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. It doesn't say that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says we share in a general way what we were like, what happened, what we're like now. If you talk about what it was like, you're going to focus on the stuff. You're trying to make yourself just a little bit superior. You're trying to make yourself just a little bit better. But when you focus on the I, when you focus on the we, when you focus on that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, when you focus on your defects of character, my God, you'll be able to uncover and discover and discard those things and then help other people do it. And when I did end up getting a cake that Friday night at the men's meeting, and I was scared to death to go there because my life was about to change exponentially. And I remember walking up to the door and there was a greeter, and I told you I don't like greeters. And there was a guy named Steve. He said, Joe, you look terrible. I said, I know, Steve, let me tell you what happened to me this week. And he embraced me like I had never been embraced. Let me rephrase that. I allowed him to embrace me like I've always wanted to be embraced. It's really, it's like, you know, we're great doing this. But when you do this, my buddy TJ used to grab, I'm going to Ireland with him on Tuesday. He's from the Bronx, a big, big galoot of a guy. He says, Conroy, take your arms and put them down by your side. I said, well, why? He said, so I can give you a hug. Damn it. Because it's really easy to do this, to keep people away. You don't know you're doing it, but you're doing it all the time. We all do it. But when you just let that go, wow. And TJ used to say to me, he says, and I'm going to swear just once. He said, Joe, has anybody told you that they love you today? I said, no, they haven't, TJ. And he says, it's probably because you're being an asshole. Because I would go to the AB meetings. I don't know if you go to any, if you have any AB meetings out here in the Valley, you know. Everybody goes, what the hell's an AB meeting? I go, I don't know, but it's just not an AA meeting, you know. It's that one where frothy emotional appeal does suffice for most people. The doctor's opinion says frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. A message has to have depth and weight. If you're struggling with something, you got to let somebody know. And you got to let the person that's going to give you the best advice know. Don't go seeking people that are giving you that loving stuff. Seek the people that can give you the advice that you need to hear. Get a job. Oh, my God. You don't know. I just told you what's going on. Get a job. But no. Get a job. I want a career. You can't get a career right now. You're a wackdo. You're dirty. You're nuts. You're crazy. Go down to 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven? I'll never forget my sponsor told me once to go to a hot dog on a stick. Can you imagine this body in a hot dog on a stick? Hi, would you like a hot dog? I go, they're hiring, Joe. I don't care. I used to be a trained underwater welder and deep sea diver, hard hat diver. I could make 100,000 million. So much money, I couldn't get a job. He says, get a job. So I went to a meeting and I had to talk about the resentment I had with my sponsor because he told me to get a job. And I went on and on and on about him. And this woman sitting next to me is writing something on a card. And she hands it to me after the meeting. And she says, I work for a company downtown San Diego. They're hiring people left and right now. They'd be more than happy to have you. I said, you know I'm an underwater welder, hard hat diver. She says, they're hiring. I says, what's it doing? She says, it's a clothing company. I said, really? Like salesman? I'd be a good salesman. So I started working within a couple of days with a company called International Mail, M-A-L-E, which was a men's underwear catalog. It was so demeaning, but it was like, it was the only thing I could get. And I remember working for, and it was just awful. And I thought, $5.25 an hour. This is 35 years ago. And they paid 3% commission over anything over 1,000. I have no idea what that means. And I thought it was a lot of money, but it's probably not. And I knew it wasn't, but it was a job. And I started at 5 o'clock in the morning. I put a headset on and I started selling underwear to men all around the country and all around the world. And it was the most demeaning thing I've ever heard in my life. And it was just, and this catalog had, this was 30, 40 years ago. They had these models, these studs of men. And I was as big as a house then. And they would call and go, "Joe, are you in the catalog?" I go, "Yeah, I'm on page 35, you know. you know. Oh my God, you're handsome. I know. I'm like eating a donut, right? I'm like, and I would turn. I go like this. I said, "I think this guy's getting excited." And they said, "He probably is." They said, "Sell him a leather jacket. You'll get a good commission off of that, you know." And then I go, "Yeah, I'm also on page 42, the one with the leather jacket." Oh, wow. Yeah, you'd look good in that, you know. And what size are you? I'm a triple X. Yeah. Okay. But I worked that job for 2.5 years. I kept showing up. It's like getting a car. When your sponsor says to you, if you're new, get a job, it isn't a rhetorical question. A job is not the job for the rest of your life. A job is the one that's going to get you to the next one. It's going to get you to the next one. And I did that, and then I got a great job, and I traveled around the world with this big law firm, made a lot of money, way too much money, till I started complaining to my sponsor. I said, "God, these people really don't appreciate what I do." And he says, "What do you want?" I said, I want a new job. I want something to change. So I started praying for change, and they eliminated my position. After 27 years, you know, and my life since then has been just this wicked pisser, as we say in Boston. You know, I've had a lot of medical stuff. I've had heart problems. I've got cancer. I've had all sorts of things, and there isn't one thing that keeps me from Alcoholics Anonymous. There isn't one thing that keeps me. When they say, "Will you?" Yes, I suppose I will. Oh, God, I would love to. Because I don't know who I'm here to help. And if you think you're here to help everybody, you're going to be disappointed with Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you have one other person that will come up to you down the road and go, "Hey, man, I saw you at the meeting. It was really good to see you." You know you've helped that person. You'll help people and not even know if you just keep coming back and being yourself and stripping yourself of all negative, all pretense and defense. And just trust that what you need to share, somebody else needs to hear. What you need to share isn't what you want them to hear. What you need to share is what they need to hear. Because there's going to be one other person in here that probably is going, "I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous is going to work for me." It'll work for you as long as you put the work into it. The uncover and discover and discarding part of Alcoholics Anonymous is the mysterious thing how this works. When Father Dowling came shuffling into this, Father Dowling was this Catholic priest from St. Louis that was a Jesuit priest, and the Jesuit order is really, really a fundamental religious order, and they do a lot of this stuff. And Father Dowling came into Bill Wilson, and Bill thought he was a drunk, because he was covered with just dandruff, and he had and he was on a cane, and Bill said, "Oh my God, another drunk." And all of a sudden, Father Dowling said to Bill, he said, "Bill, do you know that the 12 steps are really similar to the St. Ignatius principles of the Jesuits?" He said, "What?" He said, "It's amazing what can do." And then Bill was able to work a lot with step 6 and step 7. The tools for change are step 6 and step 7. The big book talks really briefly about them. But the 12 and 12 says the step 6 is the beginning of a lifetime process. It's coming back to the T-I-M-E again. A beginning of a lifetime process of uncovering, discovering, and discarding. And if you can do these things and just get a little bit at a time, just to not all at once, just a little bit at a time, you'll never be disappointed. And if you're struggling, you stop and you smell the roses and you go, "Oh my God, it really is just beautiful just to be right here and right now." In the line in the 12 and says, "May you find God when you're 30 days sober, when you're 90 days sober, when you got a year sober, may you find God now. That power right here and right now. If the power was to go out, the lights would go out, everything would shut down. Think about the day before Zoom. And Alcoholics Anonymous had live meetings everywhere. The next day, the power was gone. And some whack job somewhere said, we might be able to do meetings on Zoom. And everybody went, what? Think about it. And all of a sudden, around the world, I think this is my own personal opinion, that God was going, Alcoholics Anonymous in the U.S. and Canada needs to spread to the rest of the world. Think about it. Think about it. Because it happened like that. People started logging on in Iran. People started logging on in Russia. People started logging on in Ethiopia. People started logging on in South Africa, and they're still logged on. They've learned the basic principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, the one that Dr. Bob said, when we boil all down, it amounts to love and service. And you know what love is, and you know what service is. The Dalai Lama said this once, and I heard him. I don't know when it was. He said, most of us can love, and most of us can serve, but some of us can't do both. He says, Alcoholics Anonymous has taken love and service, and it's made them that circle and the triangle. It's just an amazing way of life. You just got to try it. And if you don't think this will work, all you got to do is ask. That power, whatever that power is, relieve you of the bondage of self so you can live right here in this moment. And when you get this moment, it's gone. Think about it. A moment is just that. And when you can live in that moment, live in that right in that now, I think that's why Bill calls it indescribably wonderful, like passengers are on a shipwreck. It's an indescribably wonderful thing. Think about passengers on a shipwreck that all of a sudden the ship is going down. They don't scatter. They try to join each other and go, let's see if we can do this together. And that's kind of what AA is. It's kind of what it is for me. And it's kind of like a symphony orchestra at the same time. I'm going to shut up after this one. Think about a symphony orchestra. Like, think about what happened before this meeting even started. It was kind of chaotic in here. It was a lot of people chattering. I don't think anybody was listening to one another. Everybody was just talking. It's kind of like a symphony orchestra. If you go to the big symphony, before the conductor comes out on stage, everybody's tuning their instrument, and they're all tuning it. Somebody says, "Give me an A," boom, 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 and everybody's tuning to an A. All the different instruments are tuning up, and it's just chaotic, and it's just frustrating, and it's beautiful at the same time. And all of a sudden, the conductor comes walking out. People start applauding, and everybody sits up straight. It's almost like, and they start playing the music. And that's like Alcoholics Anonymous. We start with the big chorus of how it works. All of a sudden, everybody gets centered. They sit still, and then somebody starts sharing the music. If you can't understand the words of AA, listen to the music till you can understand the words, because the music is beautiful, I think. I think it's the most precious music that I've ever heard. And I've heard it in so many different languages. But the one language that Bill always said, it's the language of the heart. And that's where love is. And that's where I try to live. Peace, everybody. Thanks.
Additional Encore audio archive recordings are available at www.12stepTapes.com. We request you not upload this recording to the major free outlets. We are happy to allow free listening on our own site with a subscription service. Contact us on www.12stepTapes.com for more information.